It's likely not a coincidence that you're here looking for effective information about the low-carb or ketogenic lifestyles or a carnivorous lifestyle. Are you looking for trustworthy information on healthy nutrition, weight loss, general health questions, balancing your hormones, or living a longer, fuller, or more abundant life? Even men and women at the peak of health find themselves wondering if there's more to life beyond the mirror, the scale, the stress test, the colonoscopy, or the lab test. Whether you're looking for more meaning in your life, increasing your confidence, your ability to make a bigger impact, improving healthy relationships, improving your wealth, experiencing deeper and more meaningful love, or even creating a powerful lasting legacy. Find out how amazing your life can be on this episode of Doc Talk with Dr. Adam Nally. Listen and learn as we take complex health topics and make them clear, understandable, and applicable to your life. My desire is that you find the answers to the burning questions you have, answers that will get you back on track, improve your health, and let you be who you were meant to be. Whatever your reason, thank you for being here. I'm so glad you're joining me today. If you have a question that you'd like discussed on Doc Talk, I'd love to answer it. I cannot give individual advice or recommendations, but we can answer the question in an educational format and give you some tools to make educated decisions about your health. If you have a question, email it to questions@docmuscles.com. Again, that's questions@docmuscles.com, docmuscles.com. If you're interested in more personal instruction and information on any of the topics discussed here, go to docmuscles.com/membership to learn more and sign up to be a part of my health and coaching services. It only takes a couple of minutes to learn more about your health. Again, that's docmuscles.com/membership. Enjoy the episode of Doc Talk with me, Dr. Adam Nally. Well, hello, my friends, and welcome to episode 4, Nosebleeds and Nasal Tampons. Yes, we're going to talk about nasal tampons. Actually, we're going to talk about tampons in general and nosebleeds and a whole slew of other things associated with that and some history behind that. This has been a very interesting week. Because of the weather change here in Arizona and the sudden shift in temperature going from hot to cold and the dryness that's kicking in and turning on the air conditioners, I ended up with a first time in the 52 years I've been alive, a major nosebleed that occurred on Monday. Yes, I'm going to talk about a nosebleed. So isn't that exciting? I actually have a lot of patients that have nosebleeds that end up having struggles with this, and especially during the weather change. I thought this might be an interesting topic. Not because of the nosebleed itself, but because of some interesting things I learned in the process. This was a very long and progressive issue that kept reoccurring. In fact, I had to take a couple days off from work because of this, because of the severity. I was driving into work Monday morning, and halfway into work, spontaneously had this significant bleeding that occurred to the point where I actually spent about an hour and a half trying to get it to stop in my office. My staff thought I'd come out of the parking lot after a fist fight. And anyway, in the process of attempting to stop this nosebleed, one of my wonderful nurse practitioners walked into the room and said, I asked her if we had happened to have any what we call rhino rockets, which are they're nasal tampons that we use, and we didn't actually have any in the office. So she walked in with two different tampons, vaginal tampons used for menstrual bleeding. She said, "Here, this is what the paramedics use." And having been an EMT, I remembered, "Oh yeah, that's right, we use these." So I ended up sticking a tampon up in my nose, and we ended up stopping the bleeding in that way. And it got me thinking, because I came home with this tampon in my nose, and my daughter started laughing at me, and she said, "Dad, that's funny." She said, "It's interesting." She said, "Do you know the history of tampons?" And I said, "No, I actually don't." And my amazing daughter, who loves to read, has actually she told me, "Yeah, they invented them in World War I." And so, in the process of going through this process and then having this nosebleed reoccur literally every day for the last 3 days. And then at 3 o'clock in the morning this morning, I wake up with another spontaneous bleed, and I find myself in the bathroom with tampons up both nostrils, contemplating the history of the tampon and how it works, and why it works for nosebleeds and things like that. So I thought we would touch base a little bit about nosebleeds and then give you some history about some fascinating history about some medical equipment, the tampon, and how it works. You'll be fascinated by this. You're not going to want to miss this. Oftentimes, the majority of nosebleeds occur because of three or four issues. Nose picking is actually the most common cause of a nosebleed. The front end of the nasal cavity gets irritated and a blood vessel gets ruptured. But second to that is the low moisture content in the air that can result in nasal tissue dryness and irritation, and when you're shifting from a cool to a hot room, in centrally heated homes, you can suddenly have these nosebleeds occur spontaneously, which is what's happened to me. You can actually see an increased amount of blood flow to the nasal tissue if you have chronic allergies or viral rhinitis. In Arizona, we've got four different allergy seasons, and so I suffer from allergies with the various animals we have and things of that nature. So the combination of the change in the air and the humidity plus allergies increased my risk for a nosebleed. I've not had a problem with them until recently, and this one's just been pretty significant. Had a big blood vessel that wouldn't stop bleeding. Foreign bodies can cause it. Chronic excoriation or chronic irritation from drug use, like cocaine, things of that nature, can cause it. And then if you've had facial trauma, that's the sixth thing that is the most common cause of nosebleed. So if you have or suffer from them, those may be one of the six causes that cause this to kick in. If you've had a nosebleed or you are currently menstruating, you probably haven't thought much about that small wad of fabric that you'd shove up your nether region once a week or every other month if you're menstruating, or up into the nose if you have a nosebleed to stop the bleeding from occurring. After sitting for a few hours with a tampon shoved up my nose, I got to thinking about these amazing little pieces of fabric. They've actually been made from everything you can think of, including rock salt, opium, elephant dung, and crocodile dung, just to name a few things, and they've been around for centuries. We've, as a people, been putting swaths of various types of stuff into our orifices, up into our genitals, for thousands of years, but you'll probably be shocked as to some of the reasons why these were used. It's important to get straight that the tampon itself was rarely used as a tampon in the way you and I may think about them today. They've been used as contraceptive devices, ways to distribute medications, methods of healing, and many actually had nothing to do with bleeding or blood at all. The word tampon actually comes from the French word for, quote, plug, or as in a stopper for a bottle, or more specifically for the muzzle of a gun. The French used them in the muzzles of their gun to keep dirt and grime from getting into them. They were used both preventing things from getting out and as much for stopping things from getting in. The first known folks to stick something into the vaginal region with a tampon that we're aware of are the Egyptians, or at least they're the first ones to actually write about it. They used to treat existing gynecological problems with tampons, and essentially first wrote about the use of these tampon-like pessaries that they would use, pessary being a tissue that would stay up inside the vaginal region for a while. The Ebers Papyrus, written in the 15th century BC, recommended treatment of unusual discharges, to quote them, by using crushed earth from the Nile, mixing it with honey and galena, which is actually lead sulfide, then wrapping that in a wad of linen and leaving it inside the nether region for a while. Lead sulfide contains silver and copper and gold and even some arsenic, and if that didn't kill you, it might cure your yeast infection. The Egyptians also used pessaries made of elephant or crocodile dung, soaked in linen that was actually soaked in acacia juice. Apparently, these were thought to be contraceptive in nature. The Sanskrit texts like the Kama Sutra also recommends using a tampon made of oil and rock salt as a contraceptive, yet both of these sound like a combination of chemicals that would literally strip the paint off your car. At a minimum, the doctor would probably be inclined to tell the patient, if it doesn't kill you, it's going to burn like hot coals. The Egyptians were also using these types of tampons soaked in things like goose fat or even opium. They used a tampon containing chopped onion, mash, and pine sawdust to treat heavy menstrual bleeding. They later wrote about how these seemed to cause more infection than they helped, which we now know why, and we'll talk about that in a minute. We described this as toxic shock syndrome in 1927 when we found that introducing a staph or strep bacteria into the vaginal region for longer than 24 hours with a superabsorbent tampon that was left in place for about 24 hours or longer could actually lead to significant fever, chills, low blood pressure, shock, vomiting, diarrhea, and multi-organ failure. For many ages, people claimed that Hippocrates, the most famous Greek doctor in all of history, talked about using tampons made of a linen wrapped around sticks. But Helen King states that this likely is a misinterpretation of the Greek word motos, which is essentially material they use for wound dressings. If something was to be put into the nether region of the female, Hippocrates did say that it should be covered in motos, but there's no mention of using a stick with it to stop the menstrual bleeding. In the Hippocratic Treaty, Joints and Instruments of Reduction, when a nose is fractured, Hippocrates would have the physician roll up a linen in a rag or into a form of a leather because it was soft and insert this into the nose. The ancient Greek word here used is also motos. This can mean linen dressing for wounds, but its entry in the motos in the Indispensable Greek English Dictionary by Liddell, Scott, and Jones also gives the word tent or tampon as its definition, meaning to use the linen to compress or tamponade the wound so it would stop bleeding. This may be where the imaginary Hippocratic tampon comes from. Nobody really knows. But from this history, the Roman women we know used a woolen tampon, which probably itched like crazy. One of the first civilizations to actually write about the use of tampons was the Japanese. We know that women in Japan would actually use a tampon made of paper held in place by a bandage they called a kama, or a pony. This type of paper tampon didn't hold much blood, and so it had to be changed about 12 to 14 times a day. Quite a pain. We know that traditional Hawaiian women used to use the furry part of a native fern called the hapuu. I think that's how you pronounce it. There's actually a European plant called blood moss. It's a common bog moss that's named sphagnum simifolium that has an astringent or a blood-stopping quality. And we know that it was actually used as stuffing for some of the menstrual pads using during the medieval times. There's an argument as to whether this tampon came from use in stopping battle wounds or whether it came from menstruation. Nobody really knows, and the scholars are still arguing about that. The first mention of tampon in the 19th century was by Francis Place in his treaty Illustrations and Proofs of the Principle of Populations, published in 1822. He talked about its use as a sponge for contraception. This is the moss, but they weren't picky about what it was made of. The moss was actually wrapped into a cloth of linen, flax, cotton, or fine wool. Like I said, that would really itch. In fact, this was the accepted medical treatment of the time and was actually published in the Lancet in the early 1800s, which is one of the journals that's still around today for medicine, comes out of England. This began the use of the tampon as we know it today. Up until 1925, American women wore a diaper made of bird's eye or outing flannel, which they had to wash and then reuse. There were, at the time, as early as 1890, burners available that they could dispose of. It shouldn't have to be washed. They didn't have to be reused. Johnson & Johnson manufactured the first commercial sanitary pad in 1896, but it failed because it was considered improper to talk about menstruation during that period of time, or even to advertise it during that period. But in World War I, as my daughter reminded me as I had a tampon up my nose, French nurses figured out that the cellulose material for bandaging battle wounds actually absorbed menstrual blood much better than any cloth diaper. Kimberly Clark heard about this, and they created the tampon made out of that battle material, and settled on a name of Kotex, which was a combination of cotton and texture, which is where the name comes from, in 1920. And in 1920, for about 60 cents, you could get 12 napkins packaged in a hospital blue box. Unfortunately, magazines would not advertise about it, and stores wouldn't carry them because of the squeamishness of this particular topic in the nation. But in 1926, Montgomery Ward pulled up their bootstraps and had a little courage and advertised Kotex in its catalog, and millions of women began using and accepting the sanitary napkin as the way of life. Now, as I sat with the tampon up my nose, I had actually used three different brands, and was fascinated by the telescoping aspect of the tampon, as it worked quite well going up into my nasal cavity and trying to stop this nosebleed from happening. The first telescopic cardboard tampon applicator was actually developed and patented by a Colorado doctor by the name of Earl Haas in 1931. Gertrude Tendrick bought the patent from him for $32,000 and started to produce it, leading to the now famous Tampax brand that most of us are familiar with. Gertrude Tendrick later used her factories to produce surgical dressings and bandages for World War II. They still maintained their tampon production quite well throughout that period of time. The non-applicator tampon, which is slightly different from the Tampax, was invented by a German gynecologist by the name of Dr. Judith Esser-Mittag. She was the reason, and her tampon was actually why the tampon was referred to in the medical literature as the OB tampon, or O period B period tampon. OB stands for no pad, which is the German interpretation of ohne Binde. I think I pronounced that correct. Her patent was purchased by Johnson & Johnson, and the non-applicator tampon became a force to be reckoned with comparative to the other applicator versions. Needless to say, I had the opportunity to use both the applicator and non-applicator version of the tampons in my nose, and both of them were quite comfortable. The applicator version slid quite nicely further up in, but that's what I think what it was designed to do. Today, tampons are made of rayon, cotton, or a blend of both, and I can tell you that up in the nasal cavity, they're quite soft and comfortable and stop the bleeding quite well. So I appreciate it, and I'm grateful for this amazing little invention. So what's the take-home message to this story? Number one, I'm grateful for some World War II French nurses. Number two, I've added tampons to my medical bag and emergency kits. Number three, applicator and non-applicator versions are actually quite helpful. Number four, keep your nasal passages well moisturized. Number five, if you get a nosebleed in the shower, it becomes a bloodbath. And number six, all bleeding stops eventually or after your local ENT cauterizes your nasal passage. You guys have a great week. Thanks for joining us. Take care. Bye-bye.